KPCC supporters include Fox Searchlight Pictures presenting The Shape of Water, winner of the Critics' Choice Award for Best Director and Picture, BAFTA Award for Best Director, the Golden Globe for Best Director, winner of the Producers Guild Award, winner of the Directors Guild Award, and now nominated for 13 Academy Awards, including actress Sally Hawkins, supporting actress Octavia Spencer, supporting actor Richard Jenkins, score by Alexandre Desplat, director Guillermo del Toro, and Best Picture of the Year, now playing.
From the theater at Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles' historic theater district, this is the 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. I'm Larry Mantle with 9 Film Week critics ready to tell us which movies, actors, writers, and directors are most worthy of being honored at this Sunday's Oscars. Our team of critics for the first categories are Justin Chang of the Los Angeles Times, Leo Lowenstein, Amy Nicholson, Peter Rayner, and Charles Solomon. We begin with the category Best Animated Feature. And the nominees here are The Boss Baby from DreamWorks Animation. Tom McGrath is the director. The Breadwinner from the Irish Studio Cartoon Saloon. Nora Tumey is the director. Coco Lee Unkrich, the director. It's from Pixar Animation. Ferdinand, about a pacifist bull. Blue Sky Studios and Fox Animation, directed by Carlos Saldana. And Loving Vincent, a biopic on Vincent van Gogh, Dorota Kobiela, and Hugh Welchman are the directors of that film. Charles, let's start with you. Animated-wise, these films, how strong the category overall this year?
Well, the Academy changed the voting in this category this year so that the entire body of membership was voting on the nominees rather than the animators. And this was perceived among the animators as a way of trying to placate some executives who were unhappy they didn't get nominations. And the result is not a very impressive slate. There's no reason for Boss Baby or Ferdinand or Loving Vincent to be there, particularly not when we had films this year like Big Bad Fox, In This Corner of the World, Napping Princess, Mary and the Witch's Flower. It really comes down to a two-film race here. And at a time when we've had calls for greater inclusion, for different voices, you have from Cartoon Saloon, the lovely The Breadwinner, written, directed, produced by women, dealing with a young woman's struggle against the virulent sexism of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan. And after years of Babalooey and Speedy Gonzales, you have Coco, that treats Mexican culture with great respect and affection. Those are the two, you know, like worthy candidates. I suspect it will go to Coco, which has won pretty much everything that isn't nailed down. And it's certainly a worthy winner. What I wonder is why isn't nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, and as you mentioned, production design. Was there an image in a film this year more beautiful than the Bridge of Marigolds that joins the lands of the living and the dead?
And Charles, the music. The music is superb in the film as well. Leo?
To me, the top contenders in this category, as Charles said, really are Coco and The Breadwinner, which are not dissimilar. They're both about a child's odyssey, facing some really mature themes in Coco, dealing with death, dealing with memory, dealing with the dominant power of his family. And in The Breadwinner, a young girl trying to disguising herself as a boy in order to support her family. I mean, it's these are really powerful, dark in some cases, beautiful and deeply etched films. I'm sorry we can't see both of them.
Well, one of the things I love about The Breadwinner is the material is it's dark. It's difficult to watch what the girl and her family go through, and yet it is a beautiful film. And there's something powerful about that odd juxtaposition of beauty and suffering. Justin, you want to?
Yeah, to the extent where if this story were told in live action, I think it would be much harder to take, which is not to say that The Breadwinner sanitizes the story or that it, you know, it cushions the blow, but it does, I think, especially for a larger audience who I hope will discover this movie, you know, make it, I think, a little bit more endurable. And I agree with what everyone is saying, that I think The Breadwinner and Coco are, you know, kind of the class acts of this category. I think Coco will win easily. I prefer The Breadwinner by a shade, personally.
Yeah.
Something, though, Justin, that I think you have a case in The Breadwinner similar to, say, Takahata's Grave of the Fireflies or to In This Corner of the World, where in live action it would either be hokey or unendurable to see the characters go through this. And animation provides just enough distance that you can watch it and appreciate it. The same way if you actually saw a father throttling his son, you'd be upset. But when Homer does it to Bart, there's a distance and it's funny.
Amy?
Well, before people think I'm insane, I'll say up at the top, I do think Breadwinner or Coco should win. But I just want to stick up a little bit for Boss Baby, and I'm glad that it got nominated. I mean, if anybody in there actually did dare to go see Boss Baby, there was some gorgeous animation. I mean, the opening beginning sequence has this Busby Berkeley-style feel to it. There's this amazing scene where the Boss Baby's head turns into a nuclear explosion. I mean, it's an easy target, and people have mocked this movie all year, but I was glad to see it nominated. It doesn't have to win.
Peter?
I think Coco and Breadwinner are easily the two best of breed here. You know, one thing that should be mentioned also, you know, we tend to think of animation as being, you know, all about the visuals, but the soundtrack to Coco is so remarkably alive and so integral to the movie. I love The Breadwinner, too. And I think, again, there are some people who feel that animation is about stuff that isn't all that serious subject-wise. And it's as powerful a movie about, you know, a very difficult subject and the Taliban, you know, as any live-action feature that I've seen. Loving Vincent... I'm not crazy about it, but, you know, I mean, any movie that took, 12 years to make, hand by hand, frame by frame, replications of Van Gogh paintings embedded into the animation, even though the movie itself sort of turns Van Gogh's final days into an episode of Columbo.
Christie.
Our next category, Best Supporting Actress. The nominees here, Mary J. Blige for Mudbound, Allison Janney for I, Tonya, Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread, Laurie Metcalf, we just saw it, Lady Bird, and Octavia Spencer for The Shape of Water. Amy, you want to start us on this category?
Yeah, I actually love this category this year. I remember a few years ago we were doing this show, and I complained that supporting actress so often seems to be someone scratching their head and saying, who was a girl who played a part in that other, like, super male movie that we nominated for Best Picture? And they just pick somebody at random who had nothing really to do. But the supporting actresses this year are so solid. I'm going more... Well, I think the person I'm really excited to see nominated is Mary J. Blige, because for people who saw Mudbound, like, her character doesn't even have a lot of words, but she carries so much of this personality. Like, with a look, you just read everything that she's thinking. And it's terrific work, and I'm so happy to see her up here. But I think... At the end of the day, I think I really want to give it to Laurie Metcalf, because that performance is just... so dimensional. I mean, we write off mom roles as just, oh, she's stuck in a mom role. This mom is a character. This woman has a life that you feel even when she's not on screen. Like, she's so real, and I'm thrilled that we have this performance up here.
And we have two incredible mom performances here. Peter, your pick in this category?
I would say my pick would be Laurie Metcalf as the best of the five. You know, I'm not totally over the moon about this movie, but I do think that she's pretty remarkable in it, and it's unusual to see a mom performance that isn't, you know, quote, a mom performance that has some real...
complex character.
Right, and Allison Janney, I think, is quite good, although it's sort of, you know, mommy baddest.
Lael?
I agree with Peter, except for when he said he didn't like Lady Bird, because I'll have to get back to you, Peter, on that. I don't know what's wrong with you. I loved Lady Bird. To me, the Laurie Metcalf gives an extraordinary performance in this film. If you look at her next to Allison Janney, these are the two front runners in this category. They're both playing moms who, in their own way, care deeply about their daughters, but have tremendous difficulty expressing themselves. I think... Allison Janney's performance is the more theatrical. It's the more audience-friendly. That's why more people are going to applaud for her. But Laurie Metcalf's is so deep and complex and so nuanced, and she's she's trying to find the words, and she never can really find the right words.
Justin?
I don't see how anyone could watch I, Tonya and Lady Bird and think that Allison Janney gave the better, richer performance. I think she plays, it's very arresting and funny. I think she's playing a one-note cardboard grotesque, whereas Laurie Metcalf is playing more of a real person. And I, you know, and that's kind of a, it's not to say that there's no room for exaggeration or for grotesque performances, but I think it's a bit of a shame that in all the acting races this year, that there's been one domineering frontrunner, and that is Allison Janney this year. So I'd like to see Laurie Metcalf get it, or the other actress with the initials LM in this category, Leslie Manville, who just blows everyone away in Phantom Thread.
In Phantom. Charles, quickly,
I think the mom we're missing here is Holly Hunter in The Big Sick. But I would go along, I think in I, Tonya, if you asked somebody at, say, The Groundlings to do a white trash mother, that's what you would get. Whereas in Lady Bird, it is, as the others were saying, a much more nuanced and believable performance. I just wish someone would let Octavia Spencer play something other than a cleaning woman.
Next category is Best Original Screenplay. Speaking of The Big Sick, as you just did, Charles, Emily V. Gordon and Kumail Nanjiani, their screenplay, The Big Sick, is nominated. Jordan Peele's for Get Out, Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, Guillermo del Toro and Vanessa Taylor for The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri's Martin McDonagh. Justin, you want to start us on this?
Yeah, I think this is a strong category this year, in part because four of the five nominees are also nominated for Best Picture, which doesn't always happen. The Big Sick is the one that isn't, and I actually think it would be completely surprising and far from an unpleasant one if The Big Sick won. I think that Get Out seems to have a little bit of momentum in this. It won the Writers Guild Award, and I'd love to see it win. I think especially if voters equate audacity with originality, originality with audacity, I think it, this will be the place perhaps where they want to reward it. If I had to choose, I'd give it to Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, which I just think is the best written of the nominees on the level of just dialogue. You know, every line of that movie really teems with, I think, wit and insight. But also in the construction of this movie. This movie looks very deceptively simple. It's not. It's quite complex, emotionally, spiritually even. I think it's a wonderful screenplay, and I'm very happy to
Charles?
I don't understand why Three Billboards is nominated. It is the most self-consciously written film I've seen in eons. No one talks like these characters. They give little set-piece speeches, and you can see the writer in the background patting him on the himself on the back saying, "Look, Ma, I'm writing." I liked Lady Bird. I would have liked Shape of Water better if the villains hadn't been so unrelentingly villainous. If they'd stopped twirling their mustaches and let us see something about them, I think it would have been stronger.
All right, Peter.
I think the most original of the original screenplays was Get Out. Because it's very, very difficult to make a movie that combines successfully so many different genres, so many types. It's a horror film. It's a comedy. It's a socially conscious film. It has all of these things going on in it, and it all works. It's I think the most original take on race relations in this country of any of the films that have been out this year or in some time, and that's extraordinarily difficult to do, and I think he brought it off.
How he was able to mix the satirical elements of that film, it's probably the movie I laughed out loud the most, is so funny, and then the creepy horror alongside that, how he tonally was able to hit that, to me, was remarkable.
It's unusual for me, you know, now to see a film with an audience where you really feel like it pays to be with an audience, because with this movie, they were so with it every step of the way that it was like electricity in the air, and you don't get that so much anymore.
Yeah, Amy?
I'll be happy if anything in this category wins except The Shape of Water. That's the one that I would take out in a heartbeat in pretty much every category. But I'll stick up a little bit for Martin McDonagh just in that I'm a huge fan of his writing in general and his style and his tone and his plays. I think that Three Billboards is one of the weaker things he's written, so I don't have a personal stake in it winning anything, but I generally love what he tries to do, which is just antagonize people until they all tear each other to pieces, which is what film Twitter has been like. out of these, in the interest of sharing the wealth, I'll say that I want The Big Sick to take it. You know, I think it's such an inverted, interesting type of romantic comedy where she's in a coma for half the film. I don't think that's a spoiler alert anymore. But they're just such a fresh writing team, and I'm really excited to see them get recognized. And if this is the one category where they have a chance to get recognized, I'm putting a coin on that one.
And a comedy that's consistently funny. So, you know, most comedies, it's kind of hit and miss. I thought this screenplay is, consistently delivers. Leah, which one do you choose?
So I would go with probably either Get Out or Lady Bird, both of which I think are really complex and sophisticated works because of what they do. Lady Bird, in particular, is a really, on the surface, it all seems to be about one thing, and the dialogue is all about one thing, but in every single scene, there's something else going on underneath. There's tremendous subtext. And that's a hard thing to pull off. And Get Out, you know, as you were saying, Larry, the fact that he's able to sort of navigate these different things, that goes also to Jordan Peele's direction to be able to do that. So either one of those two things. Historically, I just wanted to point out this is the Maverick category. Original screenplay, you get things like Juno, Usual Suspects, Pulp Fiction, Milk. It's sort of the one where we won't give you Best Picture,
yeah,
but we'll give you we'll Lost in Translation being another one. We'll praise your writing. So
The Big Sick could be because that's not nominated for
could
Best
be.
Picture. All right, let's move to the category of Best Actor. We'll just introduce them, and then when we come back from our break, we'll hear what our critics have to say. The nominees are Timothy Chalamet of Call Me By Your Name, Daniel Day-Lewis of Phantom Thread, Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out, Gary Oldman, The Darkest Hour, and Denzel Washington, Roman J. Israel, Esquire. So as we come back, we'll hear what our critics have to say, and our audience here at the Theater at Ace Hotel will also have a chance to vote for which performance among the men they think was the strongest for 2017. You're listening to the 16th Annual Film Week Academy Awards Preview here on 89.3 KPCC. We have much more to come in just 1 minute. From the historic theater at Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles, this is the 16th Annual Film Week Academy Awards Preview. I'm Larry Mantle with our Film Week critics, Charles Solomon, Peter Rayner, Amy Nicholson, Leah Lowenstein, and Justin Chang. So we just told you the nominees for Best Actor, some terrific performances here. Leah, you want to start us in this category?
Sure. This is an interesting category because you have veterans like Daniel Day-Lewis and Denzel Washington being nominated with Gary Oldman, who's also a veteran, but really has only been nominated once in other time in his career for Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. I think he's going to win here for playing Winston Churchill. It's not my favorite performance of the bunch by a mile because I think you sort of lose Gary Oldman under all the prosthetics and all that, but he's certainly fine as Churchill.
Who's your pick?
My pick would be Timothy Chalamet. At you know, a tender age of 22 or 23, what he does in that part is so mature, and it's really remarkable. It's so far above and beyond what you would expect for someone of that age. It's incredibly moving.
Amy, what do you think?
Yeah, to pick up on what Lael was saying, I feel like in Best Actor, you usually have this narrative going into it. It's somebody's last chance to get an Oscar. It's somebody who hasn't gotten an Oscar. And in this category, you know, we've been adding so many new members to the Academy in the last 2 years. I feel like you really see the rise of the young members of the Academy and the veteran members of the Academy both contributing their input so strongly into this category. You know, to have Daniel Kaluuya and Timothée Chalamet right next to Daniel Day-Lewis and Gary Oldman. I do think Oldman's going to take it, but I agree with Leo. I'm hoping for Chalamet because that performance, even just without his dialogue, is so physical. It's so communicative. Yeah. It's so expressive.
Peter,
I mean,
yeah. Peter, what do you think?
You know, I'm not on the Call Me By Your Name bandwagon, and I think Chalamet is it's a fine performance. He's a fine young actor. I think if he ever drops out of acting, his name alone could qualify for a new men's cologne. Chalamet. But I do think, you know, Daniel Kaluuya, I think, is marvelous. You're with him. He draws you in at every moment so that you know what he's thinking and what he's fearing. Gary Oldman, we will fight them on the beaches. You know, we've seen this before. I mean, he's very good at it, you know, but the movie should be disqualified for that subway scene in general where he, you know, decides to go up against Hitler because people on the subway convinced him to do it on the way to Parliament. Daniel Day-Lewis would be my first choice. I think it's a marvelous, marvelous performance. It's so intricate, but not you know, stylized to the point where you feel that you're watching acting. I really wish he had not announced that he's retiring. You know, why doesn't he just
loss.
Do what he always does? Just don't act for 4 or 5 years and then come back.
Yeah, Justin?
Yeah, Gary Oldman, I don't think it's a bad performance, but I think it's a ham-fisted performance. But, you know, Churchill was a ham-fisted person. So, you know, do you want the subtle interpretation? I don't know. I think he should have won for Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. Just a much more artful thing. And this is always what the Academy tends to do, is to reward you for your subsequent inferior performance. I would also, I like the two younger guys in this category. Timothée Chalamet is my first choice, followed very close behind by Daniel Kaluuya. I want to speak up. Denzel Washington is really good in Roman J. Israel, Esquire. Not a great movie. I prefer him in this film to Fences, and I actually would give him an award for this one over that, because I think he's doing a really kind of inventive, under-the-skin, unnerving performance that you don't expect from
him. The character's on the autism spectrum, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, he is, and he's also, you know, and he's an attorney, and, you know, the movie is kind of all over the place, but I really dug him in the movie.
Charles.
Ursula Le Guin and I used to play a game of creating more feline idioms for the English language. So instead of, I don't have a dog in that fight, I don't have a cat on that sweater. And that's how I feel about this category. There's nothing here that really excites me that much. I think Chalamet is fine. I think the others are fine. I think it will probably go to Oldman and all that makeup. But nothing I feel that excited about.
All right, let's take a vote for the Best Actor category. We begin with Denzel Washington, Roman J. Israel, Esquire. That's a hard one because probably not that many folks had a chance to see that film. Next up, Timothée Chalamet, Call Me By Your Name. Daniel Kaluuya, Get Out. Daniel Day-Lewis, Phantom Thread. And Gary Oldman, Darkest Hour. That's too close to call, and shows the talent in that category. That's a tough one. Let's move to the Best Director category, and the nominees here: Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk, Jordan Peele for Get Out, Greta Gerwig, Lady Bird, Paul Thomas Anderson, Phantom Thread, and Guillermo del Toro, The Shape of Water. Justin?
Yeah, I wouldn't boot The Shape of Water out of every category the way Amy would, but I do think it has been somewhat overpraised, and I've mentioned this because Guillermo del Toro has won every directing award under the sun and is going to win this Oscar quite handily. He's beloved, he's Guillermo, he is the director of Pan's Labyrinth, so I can't begrudge him anything, but I do think The Shape of Water is kind of a very overworked kind of, you know, it's not... I don't love that movie.
Who's your pick?
My pick is Paul Thomas Anderson for Phantom Thread, who I think is just... I think he's one of our great living filmmakers. I think this movie adds luster to that. I'd love to see it go to either him or Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk. I think the two of them, just marshalling of kind of the technical and the emotional, are really outstanding.
Yeah, Amy?
I want to pour one out really quick for Sean Baker in The Florida Project, who I feel like should have been in here. I feel like when you look at what a director does, that movie is so visual and has such tremendous performances that I'm sad it's not here. Without that, I feel like I'm leaning towards Lady Bird because, you know, even just thinking of any scene in that film, thinking of all the supporting performances, even by Beanie Feldstein, just thinking of the world she creates in there and the Chalamet performance she gets in that film that's so radically different, I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, Lael?
I would go either Lady Bird or Get Out, so that would be either Greta Gerwig or Jordan Peele, the two novices in this category, both acting like pros with their directorial debuts.
Peter?
My choice would be Paul Thomas Anderson. I think it's an extraordinary piece of work, very difficult to pull off because on the surface it's kind of, you know, frosty, but there's this, you know, passion underneath it. It's kind of dry ice, you know, hothouse passion that comes through in this movie, and it's a lot freakier than the ads would lead you to believe that it's not a Merchant Ivory movie. It's like Rebecca or Vertigo or one of those films. Del Toro, I don't know. I'm mixed on Shape of Water. I think I like the fantastical stuff, the melodramatic stuff. I'm not crazy about, you know. So I liked E.T. with sex, but I didn't like the other stuff.
Charles.
Well, I'm going to follow Amy's lead and say, why isn't Lee Unkrich here for Coco? Which I liked better than any of these. I think it will go to Del Toro, and parts of that film are wonderfully sensual and beautiful, and I've never seen The Creature from the Black Lagoon redesigned by Dolce & Gabbana before. But it also is, as the others say, a very uneven film.
All right, let's now take our audience vote. This is Best Director, our audience at the Theater at Ace Hotel. We begin with Jordan Peele for Get Out. Greta Gerwig, Lady Bird. Christopher Nolan, Dunkirk. Paul Thomas Anderson, Phantom Thread. And Guillermo del Toro, The Shape of Water. All right, those are the picks of our audience at the Theater at Ace Hotel. We're here for the 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. Coming up, we're going to hear from another great panel of our critics. We have more of the top categories for the Oscars to be handed out this coming Sunday at the Dolby Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. Much more to come on Film Week. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. From the beautiful Theater at Ace Hotel in Los Angeles's historic theater district, this is the 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. I'm Larry Mantle with our critics, Claudia Puig of The Wrap and president of the LA Film Critics Association, Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide, Christy Lemire of RogerEbert.com and YouTube's What the Flick, and Wade Major of IGN's DigiGods podcast. We begin with the Best Documentary Feature category, and the nominees here are Abacus, Small Enough to Fail from Small Enough to Jail, excuse me, from director Steve James, Faces, Places by Agnes Varda and J.R., Brian Fogel's movie Icarus, Last Men in Aleppo from Feroz Fayad, and Strong Island filmmaker Yancey Ford. Tim, you want to start us on this category?
Yes. Yeah, so as I look at the category of docs that we have here, several of these films, Last Men in Aleppo in particular, are about human misery and suffering. Strong Island, about pain, about human pain and suffering. Even Abacus is about the sort of duplicity of people, Icarus as well, which leaves Faces, Places, a film that is not about miserable people doing miserable things or in miserable places, suffering. It's a funny, wonderful film with these two people diametrically opposed, this young man, 34 years old, an artist, and this older woman, yet they are the same, and they adore each other, and they go out into a world that they adore, where they meet people that they adore and who adore them. So I think that's as powerful as all those other movies are, and important. Last Men in Aleppo, in particular, very powerful film and should be seen. After you see it, watch Faces and Places and restore your view of humanity.
What do you think?
Yeah, I sat on the couch just sobbing watching Last Man in Aleppo. My husband down the hall was like, what are you watching? I'm like, it's really sad. And it should be seen. It does what documentaries should do. It takes you to a place, and it shows you a world that you would not have seen, and it changes your DNA, and it makes you want to act. But I'm with Tim. Faces Places is so lovely, and it seems so twee and gimmicky on the surface. And the humanity that it reveals and the emotion that it draws from people so subtly and so unexpectedly makes it way more powerful than it seems at the outset. And the art that results is really cool.
And where did Varda and JR go on their travels?
All over France. countryside. Yeah, villages, they want to meet people in villages. They want to see faces and meet people. And the way they touch them is really, really cool and really like, unexpected. Yeah, Wade?
Yeah, I think we're all kind of on the same page here. If you look, well, all right.
Claudia's shaking
Claudia
her
just
head.
Shot me down.
No, we're not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, four of these are about very, very urgent contemporary issues, the financial collapse, the Syrian civil war, all of the, you know, Strong Islands about race relations, and Last Man in Aleppo, Icarus about doping. But Faces Places is the one that's about humanity. It's got the positive vibe going. And Agnès Varda is 89 years old. She's the oldest Academy Award nominee in history. She's a living legend. She taught at USC. She taught probably half the people who are nominated in other categories and probably a third of the Academy membership. And she just won an honorary Oscar in November. She was just given one. So, I mean, it's like a fairy tale ending for Agnès Varda. Here, we'll give you an honorary Oscar, and you get to win one outright in the same ceremony. That to me, is just a foregone conclusion. If I had to pick my own personal favorite, it would be Last Man in Aleppo, because it's just, as photojournalism, it's extraordinary.
It's extraordinary what you see these white-helmeted rescue workers
do. It's amazing. And I was at a Syrian refugee camp last summer, so it's very hard to be there and then to see this film and to not sort of feel the urgency of it.
Claudia.
I'm the outlier on, as much as I completely agree that Agnès Varda is a Gallic national treasure and she's certainly wonderful. I did find the movie a little too twee. I think I'm one of those people that feels that documentaries should be more about social justice in general. One person claps. yes, it's wonderful that's optimistic and there's artists celebrating. I had a little problem with the sea of white faces. This is France. France is a much more of a heterogeneous place. And it was like a celebration of sort of the country of France, and it was all kind of villagers. And I appreciate who she is. I appreciate the friendship. But personally, I think Last Man in Aleppo is a much more important, urgent film. Strong Island took the documentary genre in a different direction. It was a much more personal filmmaking about a woman who is trying to figure out what happened to her brother. I just prefer those other two as much as I appreciate. It was just too lighthearted for me, I guess.
All right, the best documentary feature category. We move to the best supporting actor category. And here, the nominees for The Florida Project, Willem Dafoe, from Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, both Woody Harrelson and Sam Rockwell, both nominated for that. Richard Jenkins for The Shape of Water. And Christopher Plummer for All the Money in the World. Let's see, Claudia, let's start with you. Come back this way. Your pick in this category.
Willem Dafoe is my pick in this one. And like Amy, I think that this film, you know, could have used a few more nominations, Florida Project. His character, it's a very subtle performance. He's a put-upon guy in this sort of seedy, you know, kind of motel apartment place. But he is he's kind of the emotional center. He's this wonderfully ethical guy. He's almost a surrogate father figure to the children that are, you know, being kind of raised there. I think it's going to go to Sam Rockwell. I would much prefer to see it go to Willem Dafoe.
Wade?
It's an interesting category because usually the actor categories are the ones that are most strongly representative of the Best Picture nominees, and then the actress categories are the ones that sort of represent a second tier of films. It's not the case this year. The supporting actress category, I think, is a much stronger one. This has four veterans in it. And then Sam Rockwell, who I was saying about 6-7 months ago is the best actor who's never been nominated for an Oscar. Everybody loves Sam Rockwell. Even if you don't love the movie, you love him in it, especially if he dances. You just love Sam Rockwell.
That phony redemption at the end, really?
But it's not, in this case, Sam Rockwell, it's not even about the movie. It's about his choices. You know, he's working with the material, and the material is what it is. But his choices within the parameters of what he's been given in the material, it's amazing. He stretches the material so much more than it really has any business being stretched.
That's, to me, the performance was even more impressive for the reason you're saying, Claudia, that there was stuff in the script that made it very difficult for him to try and pull that off. And I thought his performance was extremely strong. Christy?
I also think Sam Rockwell will win, and I think he should win because his character has a massive arc. And when people have a problem with this movie, and there are a lot, and I understand that, I suspect they have a problem with his character, and they have a problem with the idea that this film is promoting his character's ideology as a correct one or as one to laugh with. And it's not true. He evolves philosophically over the course of this film. And he's done amazing work for many, many years. And so, yes, he is deserving. The person who should win was not even nominated, and that's Armie Hammer. Yeah. Thank you. Because Timothée Chalamet cannot be as great as he was without Armie Hammer to play off of. But we'll get to more of that later with the Shuns section of our
did movie. You felt like you knew who Armie Hammer... To me, he was kind of a cipher. I didn't have a sense of that, who that character was.
No, he has to very subtly allow his true self to shine through. So he does evolve as well. We do have an idea of him. And he, in the scene where he dances to Love My Way, you know, he's letting his true self shine through, and that allows Elio to finally connect with his own emotional depth that he's been suppressing. That's my theory.
Tim?
Some showy performances here. A few of them. Definitely Sam, showy. But if I had to pick between Sam and Woody in just that one movie, I'd go with Woody. I know that guy. I know that sheriff. And Sam is doing this big sort of thing, and it's very entertaining and all of that, but I swear to you, I know that sheriff. But the performance I would pick, Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe in The Florida Project plays a superhero. He plays a superhero with no cape. He's not even the actual manager. He's just the assistant manager. All he's got is those keys. In this motel full of these people who need a hero to save them every day. I know guys like him, too. So that's the performance that I truly love and that I hope wins, because when he stands on that stage and receives that Oscar, I imagine there'll be a lot of folks looking at Willem Dafoe saying, that's me. I'm a guy like that guy. I'm a good guy. I like it a lot.
All right, let's vote with our audience at the Theater at Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. Best Supporting Actor. We begin with Christopher Plummer, All the Money in the World. Richard Jenkins, The Shape of Water. Willem Dafoe, The Florida Project. Woody Harrelson, Three Billboards. Sam Rockwell, Three Billboards. All right. We continue with Best Adapted Screenplay. Here are the nominees. The screenwriter of Call Me By Your Name, James Ivory. Screenwriter for The Disaster Artist, a film we haven't talked about yet, Scott Neustadler and Michael H. Weber. From Logan, we have Scott Frank, James Mangold, and Michael Green. That's the Wolverine film, by the way. Molly's Game, Aaron Sorkin, and for Mudbound, Virgil Williams and Dee Reese. Let's start in the middle this time. Let's start, Christy, with you.
So earlier, I believe it was Peter who said he's not on the Call Me By Your Name bandwagon. I am on it. I'm driving it. Come on. Join me. So I would pick Call Me By Your Name. I'd love to see James Ivory win this. It's such a delicate, and as we were talking about earlier, an internal kind of interior emotion that has to come through in silences, in glances, and it's and in the dialogue as they finally allow their true selves to shine through. What they do with The Disaster Artist is really cool because they have to take The Room, which is terrible and exists in reality, and then the book about The Room, and then Tommy Wiseau and all these folks who also still exist in reality, and celebrate this awfulness while not mocking it. And so it's kind of a cool balance that those guys pull off there. And then what else do we have? Aaron Sorkin is just like Aaron Sorkin on full blast for 2 hours. And if that's your cup of tea, awesome. And I would not pick anything else. Yeah, although Logan is really dark and like deeply emotionally impactful in ways that I don't think we would expect quite that often from a comic book movie.
Wade?
There's no question. James Ivory is going to win this. James Ivory is the second oldest Academy Award nominee in history. He's 8 days younger than Agnes Varda. Okay?
So he's 89?
Yeah, they're both 89. They both turn 90 in May and June. And James Ivory directed his first movie in 1963. Okay? That's the year after Lawrence of Arabia. That's how long he's been around. He is such a legend that his name is part of half of a moniker that describes a type of film. Oh, it's a Merchant Ivory type of film. That's how iconic he is, and he's never won an Oscar. In all of his own movies that he directed in the 80s and 90s,
He's never won an Oscar?
He's never won an Academy Award. James Ivory, yeah. Never...
Any of those screenplays?
No, because, Howard's End, Ruth Ware Jabwala wrote
those. That's right, she was the
screenwriter. So as a director, he's never won. And here he's nominated as a screenwriter, and I think people are just going to say, you're James Ivory, for crying out loud, you're going to win this award. I don't even care what the other
Claudia?
Well, this is a much easier category than the original screenplay. Because that one was, fraught with... For me, it was between Get Out and Lady Bird. This one, clearly, I think it should go to James Ivory. And this is... It's funny because the screenplay category always feels like an honorable mention to Best Picture. It's like, what we think was really good and maybe it would be the second choice. And Call Me By Your Name, obviously, is nominated for Best Picture. I don't think it's going to win that. It was so beautifully written. It evoked those emotions that you have when you first fall in love or even when you're first infatuated. It evoked the era so well. I think it's an easy win. I think that there are those who will probably want to vote for Aaron Sorkin because he's Aaron Sorkin. But.
Tim, quick on this.
Nobody speaks the way people speak in an Aaron Sorkin anything. People don't...
Sorkin land.
Yeah. He has to think. I'll tell you what. You're right, all of that. But Logan... And I am such a Fairweather fanboy.
It's
when it
a
comes
terrific
to these films.
Film.
But it's just this terrific film. And it has the constraints of being a big old action superhero movie. So it has to hit all those beats. But at the same time, there are moments in this film which just brought me to my knees. That little girl and that dialogue and Patrick Stewart, straight up Shakespearean. Straight up Shakespearean he is. Inside the big old action movie. So, Logan, I say let's let that guy have it. Let's crash.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, too. Let's hear from our Theater Ace Hotel audience. Let me begin with the disaster artist, Scott Neustadter, Michael H. Weber. Mudbound, Virgil Williams and Dee Reese. Molly's Game, Aaron Sorkin. Logan, Scott Frank, James Mangold, Michael Green. And Call Me By Your Name, James Ivory. Big winner here from our Theater at Ace Hotel live audience. We're so glad to have you with us here at 89.3 KPCC, our 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. Coming up, we'll talk about the best actress performances of the year and best picture from the films of 2017. We'll be back at the theater at Ace Hotel in just 1 minute.
KPCC supporters include Fox Searchlight Pictures, presenting Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, winner of 5 BAFTA Awards, including Best Film, Screen Actors Guild Award for Best Ensemble, Golden Globe for Best Picture, and now nominated for 7 Academy Awards, including actress Frances McDormand, supporting actors Sam Rockwell and Woody Harrelson, original screenplay by Martin McDonagh, score by Carter Burwell, and Best Picture of the Year, now playing.
Hey, Film Week listeners, my name's Annie Gilbertson, and I'm the investigative reporter here at KPCC. I'm also the host of our new podcast, Repeat. The story starts with a string of officer shootings in South L.A.
I had no freeze, no nothing. I just heard shots.
The men shot were all criminals. The shooters, all sheriff's deputies. Law enforcement said each of the shootings was justified. But did it happen the way officers said it did? Subscribe to Repeat from KPCC, an Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen.
From the Theater at Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles, this is the 16th Annual Film Week Academy Awards Preview. That's the greeting of more than 1,000 people in this beautiful 1927 movie palace that's become a second home for us here at Film Week. We are so happy to be able to join you for our 16th annual program with our critics on stage right now, Wade Major, Christy Lemire, Tim Cogshell, and Claudia Puig. Our next category is Best Actress, and here the nominees from The Shape of Water, Sally Hawkins. From Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Frances McDormand. I, Tonya's Margot Robbie. Lady Bird's Saoirse Ronan. And The Post co-star Meryl Streep. Let's start with you, Wade. What'd you think?
You can. Meryl Streep is nominated because she walked in front of a camera somewhere, and that's all it takes now, right? It's that easy. Must be nice. I do like all four of these performances. I love four of them. Saoirse Ronan, Margot Robbie, Frances McDormand, Sally Hawkins. I love all four of those unreservedly. I miss Jessica Chastain here. I feel like Meryl Streep kind of stole her.
For Molly's Game.
For Molly's Game. That's the one that I would like to have seen here. That said, Frances McDormand obviously has the edge. Three Billboards won the Ensemble Award at the SAG Awards. She won. You know, it's that the actors love that movie. Actors are overrepresented in the Academy, so it's a fair. And she's beloved everywhere. And this is that kind of part that she just eats alive. So I feel like she's clearly got the edge. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Sally Hawkins in an upset. No one has won for a mute role. I don't say a silent role, but a mute role since John Mills for Ryan's Daughter back in 1970. And there is something that is purely cinematic about doing that, about being able to walk into a film, a sound film, where everyone else is talking, and you have to anchor your character without saying a word. You everything is with the eyes. Everything is with your body language. Everything is just purely visual. There's something extraordinary about that. And given that the film has 13 nominations, I think it's possible that the support in other categories might overcome the actor enthusiasm for Frances McDormand. So if there's an upset here, it's likely to be Sally Hawkins.
All right, Claudia.
I think Sally Hawkins was wonderful, and she's great in everything. Frances McDormand is a national treasure. She's amazing. She won 21 years ago for Fargo. I think she's going to win, no question. I really loved Saoirse Ronan's performance. I thought she was just, I mean, considering how young she was great in Brooklyn, of course. She's just always great.
But a totally different character than Brooklyn.
Totally, totally different character. And, of course, she's Irish and does a completely believable Sacramento accent, I guess, if there is such a thing. I mean, she's just everything about her. When you watch her, you're completely caught up in that performance. I loved Frances McDormand's, too. But I'm gonna kind of go out there for Saoirse Ronan. I don't think she's going to win. But
yeah, Tim?
Meryl and Frances bring a great deal of gravitas, you know, as they do. But the thing that impressed me though was young Saoirse Ronan inhabiting this teenage girl. Even her own skin, those freckles and pimples that you see, they were hers from stress,
those
probably the stress of making
too,
the movie.
Yeah.
and there she is, and here I am, you know, this middle-aged dude, and she has me captivated. And I'm worried about her, and I'm wondering if I would have been as lousy a parent as her, you know, all of these kind of things, and are going through my head watching this very slight little movie. And another reason I think that she might get recognized is because between her and Greta, you know, I mean, there's been a little lack there, and I think that maybe the Academy might make up a little bit of that by recognizing her. I love those other performances. I don't know, The Shape of Water, that performance from Sally, that again, showy. Showy. You know, you got all this stuff, these bells and whistles that you can work with. She pulls it off. It's well. But sometimes when I just see a regular person, when I look on the screen and I see somebody I know, Saoirse is like a girl that I had in a high school class. I used to be a high school teacher. I taught that kid. So I know she's doing a really good job.
Christy.
Yeah, Frances will win. It's a big, showy role. All four of those acting front runners are big, scenery-chewing roles. No one's talking about Margot Robbie. Can we talk about Margot Robbie for a second? Thank you. Because beyond having to learn how to ice skate and look, like, comfortable on the ice, which is not easy, she has to play Tonya Harding from the time she's, like, what, 15? 13, 15, yeah. Into her 20s, into her 40s. And believably so, the whole way, she's a gorgeous person in real life, as we know, and just, like, suppresses all of that in the service of bringing this person to life who we all thought was a villain. She keeps you on this edge of not knowing, does she want us to believe what she's saying is true, while also making us sympathize with somebody we have not sympathized with ever. So I have a lot of respect for the tricky balancing act she pulls off. Having said that, Frances McDormand is going to win.
Okay. Let's vote with our audience at the theater at Ace Hotel as we go through one by one. Meryl Streep in The Post. Saoirse Ronan, Lady Bird. Margot Robbie, I, Tonya. Sally Hawkins, The Shape of Water. Frances McDormand, Three Billboards. All right, I think Sally may have been the winner in that category. Let's move on to Best Motion Picture, and we're actually going to hold our audience vote on the Best Motion Picture to the very end of our Film Week program, but I do want to hear from our four critics on stage right now. Let me quickly refresh on the nominees. Call Me by Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Claudia, you start us on the
I
Best
get to
Picture.
Start on the biggie here. It's so close for me between Get Out and Lady Bird. I think Get Out is such an important film. I just feel like it was the least predictable film. I think it has so much to say about race. I think it's the film of the moment. I think Jordan Peele did a brilliant job, as you discussed before, melding the humor, the tension, and making a statement without ever feeling like we're being lectured to. So I adore that film. I've seen it three times. I also adore Lady Bird, so I would be thrilled if either one of those two won. I think Lady Bird captured, again, woman director, all about women, mother-daughter relationship. It's a film about women, by women, extremely timely, given the Me Too era that we're in, Time's Up era. And just a great film. I mean, just a wonderful, wonderful film about coming of age. Unfortunately, having said all of that, I think Shape of Water is going to win, and I really hope it doesn't. and nothing against Guillermo del Toro, who I love, but I think the film that should have won the Oscar from Guillermo del Toro was Pan's Labyrinth, which is a masterpiece. Not this one. I feel like this is really, you know, it's beautiful to look at. It's visually inventive and everything, but it just doesn't. I feel like the characters are almost, they go beyond archetypes, they become stereotypes. It's just a simple story that is too easy. It's just what you're
so it didn't ask. It didn't work as like a fairy tale.
It
kind
didn't
of
work as a fairy tale or as an okay. allegory. I know what it's trying to say about the other and all of that, but I just don't feel like it said it very well. All and right. the romance didn't, I didn't buy it. So yay, Get Out, yay, Lady Bird.
Wade?
If for the first time in my life, I have absolutely no idea who's going to win Best Picture. I really don't. This is such a bizarre, anomalous year. There are five films here that I think have a chance to win. I think Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards. Any one of those could win, and there are reasons why any of them could win. Last year kind of blew up all of my usual prognostication statistics. And for a lot of reasons, there's a new Academy class that came in. Justin wrote a really great piece for the Times about how that basically internationalized the Academy to a significant degree, and that has sort of skewed a lot of things. So, I mean, we obviously have, you know, Shape of Water won the DGA and the PGA Award, and we have Get Out and Call Me By Your Name. They won Writers Guild Awards. Three Billboards won the SAG Award. So, I mean, they all have reasons why they would be there. But here's the most interesting thing. Since we went to the upwards of more than five nominees in 2009, the voting procedure is no longer the one that gets the most votes. It's, you know, it's that ranking
system. It's ranked order.
It's a ranked order. It's the instant runoff, they call it. And that has changed things in a significant way. The preceding, you know, that happened once before in the 1930s and 40s for about 12 years. And every single time they've had that system, the film that wins the most awards, more often than not, does not win Best Picture. Four of the last 5 years, the film that has won the most awards did not win Best Picture. In the preceding 60-some years before that, only happened eight times. In the preceding 30 years before 2009, it happened once. So I think we can bet that Shape of Water is going to win the most awards this year. the film that wins Best Picture is likely to be the one that gets the most broad-based support in the second and third slots, that people that has the lowest negatives. I think that's going to be either Get Out or Lady Bird.
And your pick, if you were voting?
Oh, if I were voting? Oh, good heavens. If I were voting, I don't know. I'd probably vote for Lady Bird, I guess.
All right. Christy.
Yeah, Wade's right. This is a wide open year. I can imagine it going a lot of different ways. I can imagine a world in which maybe Guillermo del Toro wins Best Director and something else wins Best Picture,
for sure.
Like Get Out, like Three Billboards. I would vote for Phantom Thread. That's just me. I love Paul Thomas Anderson. It's gorgeous, and I feel like it's up there with There'll Be Blood as one of his masterpieces.
They're both weird.
Oh, and I love weird. And that's why they're awesome, because you have no idea where it's going. Yeah, I would pick Get Out, though, would be a really cool win, the Best Picture, yeah. Mm.
Get Out, Tim. So strong. Yeah. So strong a move. What's interesting to me is that the one film on this list that absolutely positively is not going to win Best Picture is The Post, a Steven Spielberg film, is unequivocally, positively not going to win Best Picture. That's just all kind of crazy.
Starring Tom Hanks,
you know,
and Meryl Streep.
Because Spotlight won.
Yeah.
Spotlight did it better.
Yeah, and, you know, and there it is. And you know, I thoroughly enjoy that movie.
It's a guilt factor. There's a movie directed by Steven Spielberg with Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. If you're an Academy voter, you look at that and you go, oh. Well,
you're cheating. Just, that's cheating.
Yeah. I guess
practically
I
cheating.
I put it in.
Like, no, we're not going to let you have that. Lady Bird. I love Get Out. It's a fantastic movie. So well thought out. So pointed, so much about something. But I love Lady Bird for all the same reasons. It really is about something. It's not a complicated thing like race in society. It's just about this young girl's life at that particular time in our history during the little recession. And all. And that about it just made it resonate so deeply with me watching that family. That her father, played by Tracy Letts, 50-some-odd-year-old man, out of a
nominated.
Job.
He should have been nominated for
something. You know, could have been nominated.
It was an excellent performance.
Just an excellent performance. And that is true all the way through that movie. These people playing real people, having a life the way we have lives in Sacramento, and having that just wash upon me.
And Beanie
really,
Feldstein
really
as her friend should also have been nominated for
fantastic.
Supporting actress.
It's also Lady Bird. Worth noting, everyone loves Greta Gerwig. It's like Sam Rockwell, right? We just adore her, and she's played the award season so perfectly, because so unassuming. She's amazed that she's nominated.
All right, I want to thank you all very much. We're going to continue with our Film Week Academy Awards preview from the Theater at Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. Coming up, members of our audience here at the theater are going to ask their questions, put our critics on the spot to answer them. So we invite you to stay tuned. Coming right up from the Theater at Ace Hotel, our 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to our 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview at the Theater at Ace Hotel. I'm Larry Mantle with all nine of our Film Week critics. We're going to now hear from those who are in our audience at the Theater at Ace Hotel with questions for our critics. Please, your first name and where are you from?
Hi, I'm Martha. I'm from Long Beach. Michael Stuhlbarg, I hope I'm saying his name correctly. You know, he should have been nominated for a Best Supporting Actor in something. Can't we just add up everything he was in together this whole year and give him something?
He was the father in Call Me By Your Name.
Call Me By Your Name, and then he was also in Shape of Water. And there was one other thing.
The Post.
Yes.
Yeah, busy man and in multiple Oscar-nominated roles. Who wants to talk about Mr. Stuhlbarg?
I'll go.
Yeah, Christy.
Michael Stuhlbarg. Yes, I'm on it. I feel like Michael Stuhlbarg is kind of like Sam Rockwell. And he's somebody who has done amazing character work for years and years and years, and he's super reliable, and he can just immerse himself in a role, and he's versatile, and you forget you're watching him, but he always makes everything better. So I have great hope that someday Michael Stuhlbarg will get his Oscar nomination. And he was so great in A Serious Man. He's wonderful.
He's sort of like Sam in reverse,
Tim.
Though. Because as Sam is always big, Michael is always small. He always fits himself into the role, which is one of the reasons why I think he might have been ignored this year, because he is literally pitch perfect in every one of those performances.
Very subtle work,
which
yeah.
means that he's mostly getting out of the way.
All right, one more comment, Claudia.
He speaks Russian in Shape of Water. Does anyone speak Russian? Is it? It sounds like it's really authentic.
All
right, yes, sir. Your first name and where are you from?
So Phil from West Hollywood. And my question sort of tails nicely on the last one, which was the biggest snub this year. It sounded like there was a lot of Florida Project, but also potentially Michael Stuhlbarg.
Yeah. So let's take film, first of all. Peter Rayner, what film would you have liked to have seen up for Best Picture that wasn't?
Definitely Florida Project. For me, it was far and away the best movie of the year. It was an absolutely extraordinary piece of work. The feeling for childhood endangerment, the wonderful character that Willem Dafoe plays, a lot of it was like sort of, you know, what Truffaut has done in films with children. It's an absolutely extraordinary movie. It's an intuitive film. It doesn't have a, you know, gangbusters plot, and I think that may have worked against it. But it works up to a shattering finale.
Yeah, Charles.
Coco. Yes. Which I think people will still be watching years from now. Who remembers The Hurt Locker, and how many people still cry over the marriage montage in Up?
And it was another film for Coco. That was another
Claudia?
One. It was just another one of those films that came at the right time. I just wrote a piece about this in the LA Times today. It spoke to those of us in the Latino community as a salve after what, you know, has been going on in terms of political rhetoric. So I think it was a really... It's just a wonderful film on so many levels.
What about The Big Sick? Did any of you think see that as an oversight?
Also, yes. What about Jane?
Oh, I love Jane.
Jane, yes.
Jane?
The best documentary. Jane Goodall. Yeah. So good. Yeah.
There were three Dunkirk-themed films, and the best of the three didn't get nominated, and that's Their Finest, which is really sad because it views the whole event, it views World War II through the eyes of a woman. And it's directed by a woman, and it's a perspective we almost never get. And Lionsgate dropped the ball on it. They didn't promote it for awards at all, and just kind of left it out there and said it's on DVD, it's on Blu-ray, you know, find it if you want. And which is sort of shocking to me. I don't know why that decision was made, but that was on everybody's lips for months from the time it opened, and then it just disappeared in award season.
Any other, Justin?
One word, mother. Darren Aronofsky's... much maligned masterpiece.
All right.
I know Peter Rayner agrees with me.
Before a fist fight breaks out on stage between our critics.
It really is.
This, has there been a movie as divisive as Mother in recent years? No one is neutral on Mother.
No, and it got the F Cinema score. And it's worth remembering, if a movie is bad enough, quote unquote, you know, to get an F Cinema score, go see that movie. It is interesting.
And I normally
don't like movies that have exclamation points at the end of it, but this is the exception.
On that note, the Room being a terrible, terrible movie, The Room, not Room, The Disaster Artist I thought was great, and I actually thought James Franco gave one of his best performances.
All right.
Probably so far.
Yes, please, your first name and what community are you from?
Sandra Pasadena. I have a question about casting and that. In the name, Call Me By My Name, and it really bothered me, Armie Hammer's casting, and that he feels too old, and it almost felt like he's grooming, which makes a very big difference in how one interprets the movie.
Yeah, it's called He is too old. He felt too old because he's too old. And you're right. That felt a little strange, particularly in the context of what we were dealing with, Kevin Spacey, all of that, you know, to watch that film. And, of course, Timothy looks very, very young. He still looks younger than he actually is. And it got a little weird watching that as we pressed forward. But it was an excellent performance.
Anybody else? Anything on Call Me By Your Name?
Well, I think the most amazing casting was Charles. The Villa.
Great house, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Which you know, is now for sale, apparently.
I'd move there.
I was trying to figure how a college professor, researcher, for and then explained that the wife inherited.
The wife had money,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes, first name, where are you from?
Carol Marvista. This is a little off topic, but really on topic. What's up with previews these days? By the time I saw Shape of Water, I'd seen that preview probably six times, and I felt like I'd seen the whole movie by then. So I just feel like previews these days are much too long and much too much in them.
Give away too much of the film. Anyone want to wait?
That's over the last 10, 12, 15 years, marketing departments have taken over the decision-making process. So, I mean, there's just too much noise. There's too much product. You have to stand out. So they're just giving it all away right at the front to just get you in the theater. What you think of it once you see it, they don't really care as long as they can get you in and to buy that ticket. So that's the reasoning.
I am curious, everybody else up here, like, I try my hardest to never, ever, ever, ever see a preview, ever. Like, I try to show, if I have to go to a movie theater, I'll show up late, because I feel like it makes it harder for me to review a film, because I'm waiting for the scene where the girls of Sex and the City 2 are in the desert. I don't know why that was the first thought in my head, but, like, it ruins all the twists.
Previews are also very sort of notoriously inaccurate when it's a comedy, especially, because what they do is they pick all the funny stuff, the 8 good jokes that are in the movie, and that's the trailer, and then you see the movie, and it's like, okay.
The good part of that, though, Peter, is when you see a trailer or a television ad for a comedy, and nothing is funny, and you know those were the best jokes, then you know you can avoid it.
And a film like Florida Project, there are some movies that just don't make for good trailers, and that's certainly one of them. It's like try to do a trailer for an Antonioni movie or something. It doesn't work. There are certain moods that are set up that don't work for that rapid trailer.
Phantom Thread. I
come out of
trailers. Yeah, Phantom Thread. What do you do in Phantom Thread to give a real sense of the film?
It is so much freakier than what you see in those kind of stodgy scenes.
It's also laziness. I mean, if you've seen any of the satirical mock trailer stuff online, honest trailers and all that kind of stuff, there's a formula now to trailers, and they all just kind of get pounded into this template, whereas you go back into the 50s, 60s, even the 70s in particular, there was an art to making a trailer that was custom-tailored to what the film was, and they were unique, and they were different, and especially foreign language films, that just doesn't exist anymore.
There's a whole movie about that called In a World.
Yeah.
In a World.
Exactly.
I
don't
know. But I miss the old trailers where they had the booming voiceovers,
Right.
Ernest Borgnine, James Coburn,
No, I come out of trailers feeling very depressed usually because I know I'm going to have to see those movies. And when you see a trailer for the Emoji Movie, it's like knowing you're going to be executed, X days down the line.
No, it's really true. There are those moments where you'll see a trailer and you just think, oh, that looks terrible. And then you see the date come up at the end and you go, oh, that's my film week date. And your heart just sinks.
So that's why you sometimes try and change your week, right?
Yeah.
Now we know the truth. We'll continue from the theater at Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles, our 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. We have more questions coming from members of our audience. We'll be back in a minute. From the Theater at Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles, this is the 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. I'm Larry Mantle with all of our Film Week critics here to talk about whatever our members of the ACE audience want to bring up. Please, your name and what community are you from?
My name's Brandon. I'm from Santa Ana. I actually was wondering, in previous years, we've had a lot of talk of Oscars so white, Oscars, things like that. I think like that there's actually a lot of breadth of diversity in this year's Oscars. Is there anything that you think that there's missing in this year's lineup? What comes to mind for me is Dee Reese for director for Mudbound. If you have any input on the fact that maybe this is the Academy's way of maybe still kind of warming up to the idea of streaming services and Netflix and Amazon being welcomed into the kind of fold of the film industry.
Tim, do you want to start? Because you really championed Reese's directing of Mudbound.
Yeah, and I think you're right, particularly what you just said about the streaming services and how the Academy is engaging. That Dee is nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, so she's there among the nominees, and sometimes the Academy will do that, But at the end of the day, I think you're absolutely right. Therein lies the problem. Sean Baker, too, by the way, for Florida Project, and that empty slot there, that tenth slot that's not filled in. But I think you're right. The Academy, all of us, are going to have to figure out what we think about streaming services and how films are released.
on Mudbound, of course, was released on Netflix at the same time that it was released in theaters. Most of us saw it on Netflix, which is not bad, but not exactly what the Academy wants you to do. The Academy wants you to go to the movies, so we're going to have to sort this one out, Larry.
And Coco, of course, and Claudia, you've written about this and talked about this a lot, the cultural significance of Coco, taking Mexican culture and, you know, crafting a whole movie around it. But I think it's pretty easy to look and see there's still a dearth of Latino, starring Latino-themed films.
Absolutely, a huge dearth of that. And I was just talking with somebody the other day, and I was talking about this with you, Larry. I was speaking with the guy who is in charge of the National Hispanic Media Coalition, and he mentioned, you know, the three main Mexican filmmakers, Cuarón, Iñárritu, and Del Toro, tend not to hire other Latinos, and we don't know why. And if you look at, you know, in front of the camera, we all know that's true. And with the exception of Chivo, who is the cinematographer, a couple of them use quite a bit, for whatever reason, they don't. And I don't, you know, you could always make the argument we pick the best person for the particular position, but I'm just curious about that. When I look at something like Black Panther and I see how much Ryan Coogler brought in women of color, and of course people in front of the screen, I understand it's a story about Black Panther and maybe the other movies are not necessarily racially themed, but I think that's important to consider.
Yeah, but sure. Mudbound, all those women. Working on Mudbound for Dee Reese, you know. So the notion that there are not people of any given ethnic derivation or gender who can't go do a job on a movie, any job on a movie, that's done. That's over. That's just not true anymore. Cinematographers, key grips, you name it, there's a person of any color and any gender who can do that gig and can do it as good as anybody.
Charles?
I would say there's also a dearth of Asians, including, you could have filled out the animation category with films by Japanese directors. It would have been much stronger and much more interesting.
My favorite debut film this year was a film called Columbus, starring John Cho and directed by Kogo Nada, the Korean-American filmmaker. It was a lovely, small film that didn't get the recognition it deserved. I also want to speak up for Tiffany Haddish in Girls Trip.
Yeah.
Who won the New York Film Critics Circle's Award for Best Supporting Actress. And I think there, not only does she bring a breath of fresh air in terms of, you know, as a black woman, but I think there's an element of, you know, comedy is not taken seriously. And that is a brilliant, ferocious, commandingly great comic performance.
Yes.
I think that there's a certain kind of stereotyping that goes on, which just says that comedy is not worthy of being taken seriously.
This is the one area where I think the Hollywood Foreign Press actually is doing something right by dividing up drama and comedy. I just think that we should, you know, that should be the same for the Oscars.
Part of the problem here is that the business has become so competitive and there's so much material out there that risk aversion has become the de rigueur, right? The companies that own the studios are terrified of thinking outside any kind of a box. So we have lost the distribution of foreign language films. That almost doesn't exist anymore. In the 90s, my top 10 was very often at least 50% foreign language films. Sometimes I had 7 or 8 foreign language films and 2 American films. I was the snob, you know, for doing that. I can't find.
I'm still the snob. This year that I think is really interesting in terms of risk aversion is that a lot of the Best Picture nominees, several of them cost under $5 million. Many of them cost under 12. You know, they're a very low benchmark. Get Out, Lady Bird. These are not big numbers, but they're doing great effects in the award season and with critics and even financially. And I'm hoping that this means that, like, the $30 million safe Oscar film as being the safe bet. I think we're seeing a real shakeup in what gets recognized.
I'd like to get this gentleman's question in. Yes, sir. Your name, where are you from?
Hi, I'm TJ from Glendale. And my question is, thank you. One of the best performances, in my opinion, this year that hasn't gotten much critical praise through the emotion, the physicality, the humor is Hugh Jackman and Logan. And I'm curious just about your opinions of superhero movies breaking through the stigma of critical praise and why Patrick Stewart might not have been recognized with such strong performances in that film, as I thought it really did not get enough acclaim from critics.
We have time for two critics to take. Justin, I see you ready to.
Yeah, and
go.
I think it's interesting. We're going to see how Black Panther does in the in a year from now. I think there are very high hopes for that. And I'd love to see that. But it is interesting because, you know, the expansion of the Best Picture category was absolutely in response to The Dark Knight being overlooked for Best Picture and Director, which it was. And yet that has not resulted in a flood of superhero movies getting nominated. I mean, it's interesting to see for all the acclaim, I think most of it deserved that Wonder Woman got this year. It was completely shut out. So I think there is, you know, and I, yeah.
All right, one more critic, one away. Lael.
I think there's just an inherent suspicion of any film that makes, you know, $150 million on its opening week, and that's just, I think there's a sort of prejudice among the Academy.
If people
that.
Like it, it can't be good.
John. Hey, real quickly, I want to give our first panel of critics a chance for their best picture of the year. Since our second panel had that chance, we need to go quickly. Justin, your choice among the nine nominees.
It's a very wide open year, and so I have a lot of favorites, but in order, Call Me By Your Name, number one, Phantom Thread, number two, Lady Bird, number three.
Okay, Lael.
Lady Bird and Get Out are almost neck and neck, and then Dunkirk.
Amy.
I'd be happy with Lady Bird or Get Out, and I'd also like to take this opportunity really quick to remind Wade that last year he sat on the stage and said that not only was La La Land the best picture of the year, but it was the best picture of the next 10 years, and he has 9 years to go.
All right,
best,
Peter.
Best of the decade, yeah.
Peter.
I'd like to point out he's undergoing therapy
for that. I'm sorry, I'm almost
out
of time. Peter?
Phantom Thread would be, of the nine, would be my first choice, and Get Out would be my second choice, and as I said, Florida Project would be my
all
personal
right, Charles?
Choice.
Charles?
I'd start a writing campaign for Coco.
Okay. So here we are. Our audience, you have a chance to vote. Call Me By Your Name. Darkest Hour. Dunkirk. Get Out. Lady Bird. Phantom Thread. The Post. Sorry, Stephen. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And The Shape of Water. It is a wide open year, folks. Thank you so much for joining us from the Theater at Ace Hotel, downtown Los Angeles, our 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. Thank you to all of our critics for the wonderful job they do each and every week and each and every year. And thank you for joining us for our 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview from the Theater at Ace Hotel. Back next week for our regular Film Week right here on 89.3 KPECC.